Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Monster! Aquaman, Wanna Beast, Shazam, Plastic Man, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Firestorm, Batgirl, Blue Beetle, Black Orchid. Booster Gold.
Mission accomplished.
Looks like Gotham City isn't just a one cape crusader kind of town anymore. Team up with Batman, the Brave and the Bold.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 289 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our social media accounts, it's Liam. Liam, we kicked off last week with a very special theme month to round out the year here in 2023. We are lining up our content, as we mentioned last week, to work with a little bit of corporate synergy here, now that we are corporately endorsed by the powers that be at the Brothers Warner or anyone in the Warner Brothers Discovery Media Corporation. However,
but we do love them, and we think all their decisions are good. And everything they've done has made a lot of sense, especially the decisions they've made in the last 18 months, we'll say.
Yeah, especially anything that revolves around products, the DC universe as a whole, things that projects that people spent, a good portion of their lives investing their time, energy and talents into. Yeah, we love all of that. Big fans. As we are of most corporations. So
old Dave, he's just batting 1,000 right now. You can't stop this guy.
But yes, as we continue here, we are celebrating the launch of the final movie in the Snyderverse, question mark, maybe. I don't know who could possibly know or care, but it is the month at least on the original release date here of the Aquaman movie, the sequel to the original Jason Momoa movie. So we are continuing here celebrating that, as well as another exciting anniversary with our dubbed month here that was fittingly named by you.
Once again, it is, of course, Aquafantasmonth. And I was thinking about this week, with it being in the holiday season, should we have made it Aquafantasmis? Well, it doesn't matter. It's too late. It's Aquafantasmonth forever now.
Well, yeah, and this allows us, should we want to celebrate again in the future, but not in December, it's possible to do so. What if we wanted to celebrate it in June,
That's right. There's more Aquaman episodes. There's, Phantasm pops up in comics and stuff. It's not impossible we could bring this back at some point in the future. It doesn't always have to be in December this way. To your
that's,
point.
That's right. And as we talked about, if the fan demand is there, we will make it happen. So let your voices be heard. Liam, we are continuing, as you mentioned, though, with celebrating Aquafantasmonth with our review today of the Batman, the Brave and the Bold episode. So we are traveling across the multiverse once again to our favorite Elseworld. And we are celebrating it with Aquaman's Outrageous Adventure, which originally aired on the Cartoon Network here in the States on January the 8th, 2010, meaning we are coming up here very shortly on the 14-year anniversary of this week, of this episode's debut. Of course, we are going to get into our four categories and breaking down our plot synopsis here in just a second. But before we do that, we'll, of course, remind you that we would love your feedback. And if you leave us a 5-star review for this, if you like Aquafantasmonth this much and you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review and leave a little blurb about what it is that you like about the pod. If we read that review on air, we'll send you a little gift as a thank you, provided you live in the continental United States. So as a reminder, you could do that or win something for free. Take the time. We will thank you for it. But Liam, before we get into our plot synopsis for this week, we will get the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which is, of course, as always, brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today and subscribe to get not only the entire catalog of the Tin Talk podcast, which covered every episode of the DCAU from start to finish, with a bunch of other bonus episodes included. It also includes the entire ongoing catalog of the Jump on the Batwagon podcast from the fine folks at the Watchtower Database, but also, of course, a little old podcast called the DCAU Review also makes its YouTube home there, and that's all in one convenient place for you. Head over today and subscribe to youtube.com/The Pod Tower.
Absolutely. So this is the synopsis for Aquaman's Outrageous Adventure, written by Stephen Melching, directed by Ben Jones, with music by The Dynamic Music Partners, and animation by MOI Animation. And that synopsis reads as such. Batman and enemy ace stop aliens interfering in the past. Later, Aquaman takes his family on vacation and must resist his desire to fight crime.
Pretty good. I don't have any fault with it. He worked in a line about the
little opening vignette we get. So yeah, covers our bases.
I agree. And Liam, before we went on the air, we talked about it. Sometimes things just happen that make you go, "Wow, what is this?" And this will be the second time that the very obscure character Enemy Ace gets a name check within the last 3 episodes of this podcast. And that is, of course, because we had Kevin Altieri, the director of the episode Showdown, on just a few weeks back. If you didn't check out that episode, lots of great stuff talking about that episode with Jonah Hex on it. And we sort of had him fantasy book if he were to do a follow-up episode to Showdown, what it would have involved. And he mentioned that Enemy Ace was actually on the short list of characters that was originally considered for the interaction with Ra's al Ghul that would have been a part of that story. So he actually gives a little pitch for us on that episode. So interestingly enough, this episode of Batman the Brave and the Bold also features Enemy Ace, as we open things up here in our little opening vignette, as is the case with all of these Batman the Brave and the Bold episodes. You get a little short story here at the beginning, a 2 or 3 minute adventure for Batman, and it actually features the most Batman, I think, that we get for the episode, as we'll discuss here in just a moment. But we open up in a setting which appears to be World War I, especially based on Enemy Ace's appearance. But there is an alien dictator who appears to be somehow have showed up here in the past and is doing his best to take down armed forces of that time. And Batman swoops in, doing so in the process. Also, Enemy Ace also shows up and begins actually shooting at Batman, just until Batman can pull him aside as they're both flying their planes. And he mentions to him that they have a common enemy at this point, and that they need to focus not on taking each other down, but in fact taking this alien time traveling dictator down.
Stand down, Enemy Ace. Today we must fight a common foe, injustice. Who are you? Someone who's not supposed to be here, but neither is that cannon. A weapon that destroys the enemy at such a distance. It is not honorable. Will you help me?
The enemy ace finds the weapons being used dishonorable, agrees with Batman to for a temporary treaty, and they do their best to take out said weapon. They do, restoring everything back to normal. Batman parts ways, not before enemy ace offers him a warning to not cross paths again, because he shan't be friendly. It reminded me a little bit of the Snoopy versus the Red Baron Christmas song, since 'tis the season. Merry Christmas, my friend. He had him dead to rights, but they agree to part ways for a common goal here. So that's the end of our little vignette, a nice little bow on that. But funny that we get an enemy ace mentioned twice in a period of 3 weeks here, after 288 episodes or 287 episodes of not hearing enemy ace mentioned here on the pod.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a little bit of serendipity for our recent episodes to suddenly have that character. Yeah, it's one of those characters where I certainly knew of the character, thanks I think probably to one of those DC Comics encyclopedia books. I certainly knew that there was a character called enemy ace, but wouldn't have expected to have him as a topic on the show for twice in such a short amount of time. But yes, from there we get our theme song, of course, and then we open up on what seems like a solo Aquaman adventure under the sea, as he's fighting one of his very classic villains, the Fisherman. Not a joke. That's actually what about the Aquamans. As they do battle, and Aquaman, along with some help from some whales and dolphins that were swimming by, foils his foe, only for the dolphin to begin speaking to him, and then he slowly realizes, they slowly get the pan out and the dream sequence fades. We find out that Aquaman is actually daydreaming as he's driving an RV and is taking his wife Mira and their son Arthur Jr. on a road trip across America. And it's like, has there ever been, usually we save our thoughts on the plot for the end, but has there ever been a more perfect idea for a story in a superhero show?
Especially a literal fish out of water here, right? Yes. We have the fish out of water story, a sea dweller forced to surface dwell for an extended period of time, a man who spends his life swimming the 70% of the world that's covered in water, and instead is forced to drive in a Winnebago across the United States, visiting various DC cities. You have to love it.
Absolutely. But it's clear that Mira is sort of the driving force of this vacation, trying to get them to spend some time away from Atlantis, away from the superhero world. Although Aquaman, as we said, keeps sort of dreaming of getting back to heroics, and their son doesn't really seem that interested, is just playing on his whatever the Atlantean version of an iPhone is.
Mm-hmm.
is not interested in being there. So as
it's a shell phone, right?
Yes, absolutely. You got to call it the shell phone. But I think SpongeBob might have beaten us to that joke, but it's a classic.
Sure.
So,
sure, yes.
But I mean, that show's been on for 30 years. You would hope they'd gotten around to that by now, right? But anyway, but yes, they pull over at a diner in Star City, as it happens, and Aquaman is just needs a little bit of a break, so he tells his wife and son to order dessert while he runs outside, pretending he's checking on the RV, but really he gives Batman a call and then sees what he's up to. And
hello, Batman, old chum.
Aquaman, what is it?
I need to be rescued from this blasted vacation.
Not a good time.
I promised the wife I'd take 2 weeks off work, but I've got cabin fever. Superheroing is in my blood. Wait, you're fighting henchmen, aren't you?
The Penguin's on another crime spree.
The Penguin? Really? Need any help? I could be in Gotham in no time.
Enjoy your vacation, Aquaman.
Wait, but I...
Roasted rodent, anyone?
Batman is hot on the trail of the Penguin in Gotham City and tells Aquaman he doesn't need his help and to just go off and enjoy his vacation. So Aquaman, a little disappointed that he can't get right in on the action, but as he should, as it stands, he sees the arrow signal in the sky. This is, they really embrace the original version of the Green Arrow that I love, which is that he's just Batman. He's got the car and the cave, and he's got a signal in the sky.
Listen, this has been a time-honored tradition here. I mean, we loved the Stephen Amell CW Arrow show, but absolutely, it's the same formula. They literally took the villains, the Arrow family. You have an Oracle type. You have all of these different Batman. Batman's in the DNA of the Green Arrow. You can't separate the two of them. So why not just completely embrace the silly goofiness of that Silver Age Green Arrow that was just Batman, but a Green Archer.
Absolutely. So as Aquaman rushes off to the scene of the crime, we see the Clock King has just robbed a bank with some henchmen, and Green Arrow arrives first before Aquaman sort of crashes the party, and they take out Clock King's henchmen very quickly, but he gets away. He escapes to a seafood restaurant and decides to make his last stand by grabbing a hostage of one of the waitresses. And of course, he happens to be standing with his back to the lobster tank. And so Aquaman, like, this by all rights should be an episode that is just doing nothing but making fun of Aquaman as a concept.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't come off that way at all.
Not at all.
Like, it's amazing how they do so many great gags with Aquaman's power set and, but that never feels like we're poking fun at this character or making him the butt. We're laughing with him. We're not laughing at
right.
him.
Right. Absolutely.
Episode. And in this case, he sends all of the lobsters after Clock King, and that gives them enough time for Green Arrow to fire off a boxing glove arrow.
That's called bagging the bad guy, Star City style, fish boy.
Indeed. Truly, you are the world's greatest archer.
Far enough, Super Schwein!
Well done, my friends. Now that's how you stop a clock.
Yeah, whatever.
Never underestimate the power of teamwork, my friend. Say, how long does it take to eat a piece of apple pie?
So Aquaman, having thwarted some crime, he rushes back to the diner where Mira and Arthur Jr. are a bit suspicious. But at least at this point, they don't necessarily suspect that he was off fighting crime. But it's time for them to continue onto their route, and it takes them to El Paso this time, and right into the city of Blue Beetle as we get across another very deep cut DC Comics character that Blue Beetle needs a little help dealing with.
That's right. Aquaman finds another excuse to send Mira and Aqua Jr. off on an adventure on their own. He puts them in a carriage and claims that he has land sickness, which I chuckled at. He has to go get himself a sarsaparilla at the local saloon. And when he goes into the saloon, wouldn't you know it, the TV is on, and they are in fact broadcasting the fight between Blue Beetle and the Planet Master. Talk about deep cuts. Woo, boy. Who apparently has all of the planets, or the power of all of the planets. So this is happening at a gold mine, and he's able to channel different powers. So the fight between Blue Beetle and Planet Master is going off. Blue Beetle appears to be a bit overmatched, at least initially, but then Aquaman shows up gladly there to assist. We didn't mention it though, but each time that Aquaman steps into an adventure, he announces the title, or the title card launches in front. A great homage to classic cartoons, a little bit of Super Friends homage, a little bit of,
we never know when to talk about the sound design, but you get that scene transition Super Friends sound when the title card pops up. So it's
chef's kiss, beautiful. We get him fighting the Planet Master. He steps in to assist and defeats him once Planet Master throws a meteor at him, which he knocks back and knocks him out. not chuckled at Blue Beetle declaring just before this that he better hurry up and help defeat him because they don't want to see the power of Uranus.
Greetings from Neptune!
Aquaman? The Aquaman? Get out! What are you doing here?
Hello, my bug-eyed buddy. I'm exploring that mysterious 30% of the Earth's surface not covered by water.
Fools! Witness the power of the rings of Saturn! You really don't want to see the power of Uranus.
What say we silence this cosmic crook? Comet atcha! Well done, new chum. Be sure to drop by the next time you're in Atlantis.
I mean, I'm...
Another joke you can't not do. If you're
I'm 12 help. Years old at heart. I laughed, you know?
You can't not do that. Again, you can't not do that joke if you're, going to have a character whose power is, and I quote, all of the planets.
Right. Exactly. So, yes.
And he also takes great offense when Blue Beetle points out that Pluto isn't considered a planet anymore. He's furious at that, which I thought was really funny as well.
That was a, I was wondering, I was like, I know this is 2009 that this was, all the copyrights say 2009 on this, although it aired in 2010. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I'm pretty sure Pluto hasn't been a planet for like, it was probably 10 years at this point that it wasn't a planet. So yes, I was glad that they pointed that out and worked that in as a joke. After Planet Master is defeated, Blue Beetle, very impressed to meet one of his idols, and even asks Aquaman if he can name their adventure. And just as he's about to spit the title out, Aquaman cuts him off and announces the title instead. And we pick up Aquaman rejoining his family at a hotel, where they seemingly are none the wiser as to just what was going on, as he's gotten and met up with them after their carriage ride. But Mira and Arthur Jr. turn on the television and see a report of Aquaman and Blue Beetle helping to defeat the Planet Master. Aquaman initially makes an excuse and says that it is not him. It is Ocean Guy, who has a similar color scheme. But once Mira gives him a dirty look, he admits that it's very hard for him to stop being a superhero, as we've clearly witnessed here, and that but he promises from here on out, he promises no more superheroics for the rest of their trip. They're going to enjoy their vacation together. And then we get for the next several minutes, we get just a wonderful montage, a classic trip montage here. I would guess probably some National Lampoon's Family Vacation mm-hmm. homages in there. Any movie that involves a family in a road trip, you just get the map and you get a 2D animation of the Winnebago driving from town to town. We get them going to the Grand Canyon first, and Aquaman is taking pictures and clearly still disappointed that he's not able to save anyone from it. And I love all the tourists around, instead of taking the pictures of the Grand Canyon or taking a pictures of the Aqua family, instead standing at the Grand Canyon. They then move further into the country, and they come upon, I believe it's at Smallville, they run into the Red Tornado. Mm-hmm. Who is going up against, who's he going up against?
The top,
that's right. Okay. And Aquaman sort of wistfully looks out the window and gets initially excited when he sees that the Red Tornado appears to be overwhelmed, but then Red Tornado recovers very quickly and is able to overtake the top, thus leaving Aquaman saddened as he continues to drive on. They go to another city where they are checking out the Mineral Museum. Aquaman also very excited. It looks like Dr. Polaris, is that who that is, mm-hmm. hanging outside. He comes outside. Dr. Polaris is there waiting, and he's about ready to do battle with Aquaman, but a giant green boxing glove comes swooping in and knocks out Dr. Polaris. As we see, Green Lantern is there to stop Dr. Polaris. And we get the rest of the trip as Aquaman just sort of just coming to terms with the fact that he has to do what he agreed to do. And that is until our very last shot, as he's finally parked on the East Coast, and they're ready to enjoy all of the rest of the sights of the East Coast. And Aquaman gets a call on his phone, and it's from Batman. This is also, I missed another classic road trip homage, and that is where you pass like a stranger, and there's this back and forth between the two of them. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a guy and a girl. Sometimes it's two guys rivaling each other. But Aquaman looks out the window and sees Sportsmaster driving past and in his car, and he's ready to sort of do battle with him. But then he also notices that Sportsmaster has a wife and child with him as well, and assumes that Sportsmaster too must be on his family vacation.
What a great bit. Oh, I was crying. Like, this is like just so funny. The slow pan out where you, and then you see the Sportsmaster also has a wife and kid in his car. Yeah. and the suitcase is strapped to the back. It's just the timing. We'll talk about that more in visuals, but yeah, just a great funny joke there. But yes, as you mentioned there, Aquaman gets a call, and it seems to be from Batman, but as it turns out, it's actually the Penguin gloating about how he has captured Batman.
Why, it's Batman. You'll never guess what, old chum. I'm actually enjoying this family vacation.
You fell right into my trap, masked meddler. And when the razor-sharp beak of my drinking bird finishes you off, the Gotham crime world will make me its king.
Justice will deal with you, Penguin. Eventually. Great grouper! Batman needs me.
Preparing his assault. He's going to destroy Batman, and also he has a plot for the rest of Gotham City as well. So knowing that his old chum is in quite a bit of danger, Aquaman decides, seemingly without letting Mira and Arthur Jr. know what's going on, decides they're going to take an impromptu trip down to Gotham City. And
which you have to love it, because they heavily leaned into the fact that Gotham City is obviously a crime-ridden city. Yes. And as they're passing by the burnt out buildings and the broken down cars, missing tires, and Aquaman is doing his best to sell this as like an East Coast oasis.
Yes.
And Mira calls him out for the BS, saying like, this is where Batman lives, right? And he plays dumb. He's like, is it? I wasn't aware.
It's like, and as he's saying it, he's holding a thing with a flashing bat symbol on a map that he's following.
Good.
Yes, he finally arrives at the location the tracker's taking him to, of course, the Penguin's hideout at this warehouse. And we see that Penguin has a plan too. He's not only he has Batman hooked up to this, one of those things where the bird head is on the pendulum and it swings up and down. I think there's a name for those, but
it's like a dipping bird. Like it, I forget what they call that, but yeah.
But there's a giant one of those that's preparing to peck Batman to death as he's on a giant conveyor belt. And also he's going to release a bunch of rocket propelled umbrellas across the city that all have paralytic gas inside of them. That will put the entire city to sleep and allow him to rob it blind. So Aquaman springs into action, and as do Mira and Arthur Jr., who are finally sort of fed up with what they know are pretty clearly lies being told by their husband. And so they're all sort of captured at once by the Penguin and his goons. And as they're all loaded onto this conveyor belt, they have a bit of a heart-to-heart. As Aquaman apologizes for sort of misleading Mira, and they decide that, well, even though they wanted a normal family vacation, they're not really a normal family after all. And so they all spring into action with, once again, Aquaman using his powers. He calls on some crabs to retrieve Batman's utility belt. And then Batman's able to free himself and free Aquaman, and they spring into action, take out all of the thugs, and with Penguin making his escape via his helicopter umbrella across the sea, Batman and Aquaman spring into action to close out the action portion of our episode.
That's right. Yeah. So they are able to defeat them. We get, as you mentioned, a trip out to the sea. We get the fun that occurs on the water out there. I loved the Batman defeating half of the goons that were on the Penguin submarine with the weight of the bat boat.
Yes. He basically uses it, makes a hard turn, causes a big tidal wave to splash across the top of the sub that's surfaced and knocks half of them into the water. It was a great bit there. And then, yes, Batman and Aquaman spring into action on top of the submarine and finally are able to corral Penguin and his thugs. And we get a nice little epilogue to the story with them loading all of them into police cruisers. And Aquaman once again apologizes to his family and thanks them for understanding and asks if they want to go back to their road trip, but they all sort of are in agreement now that it's a little bit more fun to be a superhero than it is to be a regular old boring family. And that's kind of how we end the episode, with the fact that we get the big embrace.
I promised you a real family vacation, and by Poseidon, that's what I intend to give you. Now, who wants to see the Stonehenge made from old refrigerators?
Where's the fun in that?
Yeah, I want to see you save the world again. We'll call it The Time My Dad Saved the World Again.
That's my boy.
Speaking of like the sitcom, the family vacation movie ends with what else but a big group hug as Aquaman, Mira, and Arthur Jr. are all on the same page again.
That's right. Yeah, it's a nice little bow to put on the end of it. It's a feel good ending here for our Aqua family. But overall, I really enjoyed the episode, as we tend to with these episodes. It's goofy. I think you hit the nail on the head. It walks the line of, it's sort of it completely encompasses exactly what the show is, right? The show is designed to embrace and also laugh at the campiness of the Silver Age era of that Batman, of the heroes of that era, right? And I think it does that. It walks the line with Aquaman and all of his goofy powers. And certainly this Aquaman's persona is even more over the top, just like muscle head, like, I don't know, he's just a buffoon. Like, there's no other way to describe it. He wants to fight and be a superhero. He's not really that smart. You know, he's got the girl. He's like the jock, essentially, of the movie. So he's like, I feel like it walks that line of kind of poking fun at him. He's not a big dummy in the fact that he's absent-minded or he doesn't realize what he's doing. He just loves being a superhero.
Yes.
So he doesn't look like an idiot in that way. He's just kind of goofy. In the sense that this is what gets his blood pumping. He can't not be a superhero, right?
Right. And you could tell, like, he still loves, like, that's the whole thing. He's a great family man. Like, he loves his wife. Like, he's trying so hard to be this straight laced, middle America tourist, but he just can't help it. And he's trying so hard. And he's like, and when he does go out and, you know, save the day with Green Arrow or Blue Beetle, he feels like so ashamed of it because he knows that's not what his wife wanted from him. So it's kind of a fun balancing act. Yeah, he doesn't come across as a complete idiot or as like a jerk at any point. He's just very, he's got a bit of a one track mind, and he's aware of it, but he can't really fight his true nature.
He's inherently good too. Like, that's the whole thing about it. So that's why I feel like it fits that, you know, 1960s, 1950s superhero model so well, and does and walks the line of, yes, he uses his telepathic powers to speak to the the lobsters in the lobster tank at the seafood restaurant. He uses crabs, you know, that are just outside on the docks to help rescue Batman. Like, there's a bunch of stuff there that's like, this is silly, but it doesn't poke fun at him. It doesn't make him look like a goofball because he's able to do that. So I really, really enjoyed this episode. It's a lot of fun. The whole idea of the prototypical, pun intended, fish out of water story of the character in places where he doesn't belong and wouldn't normally interact with the things around him. And then as he's fully embracing it, I love when they walk out of the mineral museum and he's wearing like the mineral shirt and the kitschy like souvenir mineral headpiece and stuff like that. Just fully embracing the goofiness of the prototypical 1950s, 1960s Great American Family Road Trip, model. So yeah, for all of those reasons, this is a simple, easy watch. Lots of chuckles along the way. Lots of good one-liners. Lots of great cameos and great little interactions that he has. The title cards jumping in every time he starts a new battle with somebody made me laugh each time. So for all those reasons, I ended up giving this a very strong 8 out of 10 for plot. What about you?
I went 10. I just adore this episode. I had to give it a 10 for that reason. It's everything what we've just talked about. It's everything that's great about this show summed up in a single episode. It's, as mentioned, like the gags in it are genuinely really funny. Obviously that some of that's on our voice cast and our direction as well. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it's a great concept, as we said, from minute one when it's Aquaman in an RV with his family. That's great. And then the conflict of the episode being that he's too good at superheroing, he's too heroic for his own good is a lot of fun. And then the ending, you know, the very, very sweet family ending where they sort of meet halfway, where he realizes that he needs to be more honest with his family, and they realize that, you know, asking him not to be a superhero is pun very much intended, asking a fish not to swim. It's just wonderful. It's just a wonderful 22 minutes of assorted fun, and you get as we'll talk about, a lot of the recurring, like the most recurring sidekicks to Batman in this show, with Aquaman, Green Arrow, Blue Beetle showing up. So a lot of fun characters, not to mention all the villains. We'll run down the whole list in a minute when we get individuals, but yeah, this is just a wonderful way to spend 22 minutes.
Agreed. Yeah, lots of fun. I don't think you can watch this episode without smiling. Like you're probably dead inside. Check your pulse if you don't enjoy this one as much as we did. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be visuals and animation. As we talked about, lots of great stuff to talk about here. And as you mentioned at the top, MOI Animation responsible for this week's episode. We also have it being directed by Stephen Melching. All right. You want to talk briefly about the little, I love the little, the little prologue there with the enemy Ace. And it actually made me think of some of the dialogue the conversation that we had with Kevin Altieri about how he would sort of storyboard, you know, an air fight and a battle in the air. And I love the idea of the setting of the World War One era, and Batman's there for whatever reason, not ever explained why. And then you have the aliens also there. Just a fun setting. Really cool to see. Really cool to bring out one of those obscure guys, not make a full episode about him. Again, I don't think you're going to be able to find too many instances where Enemy Ace has appeared in animation prior to this or after this. So really, really cool that they were able to sneak in some of those really obscure characters and do so with a really fun little sequence here of a dog fight. You have this dog fight that occurs in the air between Batman and Enemy Ace, albeit so brief, but then you cut to them actually like dropping the bombs on this this strange alien race and their machines to help the soldiers win their battle there. But very, very, very interesting. I really enjoyed the prologue as
Batman in his scarf and goggles, his World War One pilot outfit, also always a plus.
There you go. Absolutely. Another thing that made me think of Snoopy versus the Red Baron. You just get get additional stuff there. But yeah, I thought that was fun. Not much else to talk about with that. Of course, this show does integrate the CGI vehicles into and different constructs into the show. The Batmobile, the Batplane, the alien, whatever those alien things were, the cannons that they were shooting. And then I guess probably later on some of the it may have been masked a little bit with like the Winnebago and stuff like that. So it's interesting. Some of the stuff they cel shade over top of or cel shaded on top of, some of the stuff they didn't. There's a weird sequence where the Batmobile morphs into the Batboat and it starts off very CGI and then it gets into the water and it morphs completely into like a cel shaded boat. That was like the thing that like I could deal with the rest of the stuff, but that one stuck out. It was like, that's just so weird that they chose to do that. So listeners will know I'm not usually a fan of the inclusion of CGI, non-cel-shaded CGI parts of the show. So I wasn't exactly a fan of that stuff. But the rest of the episode is a ton of fun, Liam.
Absolutely. Should I just run down all the characters we get first?
I was going to say that's a tradition, it seems, I think, when we do the Batman, the Brave and the Bold, because they love to sneak in as many cameos as possible in a single episode. So I'm sure you have the list pulled up of everybody in the episode.
Absolutely. So we, of course, have Aquaman, Aquaman's son, Arthur Jr., Mira, Batman, the Atom, the Ryan Choi Atom specifically, Blue Beetle, the Jaime Reyes version, Green Arrow, Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, the Red Tornado. And then in our villains, we have a mention of Black Manta. We have the Bug-Eyed Bandit fighting the Atom, Clock King. We have Clock King's henchman, Tick and Tock. Dr. Polaris, as you mentioned, the Fisherman, as mentioned, Planet Master, the Top, the Fisherman, if I didn't say that, and the Penguin, of course, and then other characters, of course. We also, as mentioned, have Sportsmaster, his wife, the Tigress, and his daughter, Artemis. So, and then also, as you mentioned, you had the map. I'm not going to go through all of these because there's like 100 cities. I think most of them are like fake DC cities too, which is why it's what you get. You have Smallville, you have Star City, you have Fawcett City, Bloodhaven, Fawcett City, Gateway City, Ivy Town, a lot of deep cuts. Hub City, Jump City, which is they never called it that in the Teen Titans cartoon, but that's like DC San Francisco in certain things. I think they call it that in Teen Titans Go now. But a lot of deep cut. Dakota, you see Dakota at one point. So you got a lot of deep cut and not so deep cut DC cities across that map as well. So just working that in again in this very silly, simple plot of Aquaman racing across America, using that as an excuse to just shout out like every fictional city in DC Comics America is it was an incredible touch on their part. And as you mentioned, some of the visuals of those sequences are a lot of fun. And like you said, you get all these quick kind of snippet battles with Red Tornado in the Top and Green Lantern and Polaris, and then the little bit longer ones with Aquaman and Blue Beetle against Planet Master, I think, is a lot of fun. And the Clock King one is pretty fun as well. So there's just a lot to enjoy. And then, as we mentioned, that final bit in the water where Batman makes the tidal wave to dock some of the thugs down, and he ejects out of the Batboat, and as is tradition when you have Batman in the sky at night, he makes the bat symbol in front of the moon. And very quickly before landing on the sub, and then heads to work there, and get some good fisticuffs there. as mentioned, the great visual gag of when Aquaman is where he's lying to Mira about why they're in Gotham, and as he's talking about how it's this burgeoning metropolis and it's the cultural center of the East Coast and everything, and there's just blown out buildings and like trash fires behind him as they're rolling through the city, and you hear gunshots and people screaming and stuff. It's just there's a great bit of a visual comedy added there as well. So yeah, this is just a hoot visually.
Yeah, the individual fights that we get, as we mentioned, I think maybe I'm trying to think which fight. I guess the Planet Master one is the one that's the most involved and seems to last the longest. The Clock King one is more Aquaman and Green Arrow versus his two henchmen, and that's wrapped up relatively quickly. So most of the fisticuffs occur between Aquaman and the Planet Master. So there's still lots of violence. Then we get our final battle that occurs on the Penguin's submarine at the end, which is a lot of the Penguin's henchmen versus Aquaman and Batman. So we do get some fun there. Again, I think this episode, though, it has these little breaks of action where Aquaman sneaks off to fight, but most of the comedy, or most of it, is a comedy episode. So most of it is the visual gags of him sneaking off, him reacting to try and have the self-control to not be a superhero, his reaction to seeing the other heroes in action and not being able to help, him trying to nervously react to Mira and Arthur Jr. There's much more of that and visual storytelling than there is in the actual action of the episode until that final act. At the, you know, with the giant penguin bird, dipping bird thing that almost crushes them. I actually really, I don't know if this fits with visuals or with plot, but I'll discuss it now with visuals. But I love that the Penguin is discussing his master plan and they cut away and you can't even hear what he's saying as you have this conversation between Aquaman and Mira, and you still hear him muffled talking in the background about whatever his plan is as Aquaman and Mira have this heartfelt conversation where she's finally sort of embracing the fact that he's a superhero, that this is much, you know, it's hard to, you know, to fight upstream, again, using a pun, and not worth it when it comes to trying to make him be this person that he's not. And then they cut back in as the Penguin interrupts him. Is like, excuse me, am I interrupting something? I love that, because they just have this warm look at each other, and then all of a sudden you realize they're on this conveyor belt, still tied up, about to be killed by the Penguin's death trap. So lots of fun there. Overall, I really, really, you know, we always enjoy the look of this. I guess this is the perfect amalgamation. We talked last week, are you team orange shirt or are you team hook, hand, and beard? And as you mentioned, we get the kind of the amalgamation here, as we get orange shirt and green pants, but also the blonde hair and the beard. It's short blonde hair, but he at least gets the beard out of the look here. This is a pretty cool look. I actually kind of dig this one, especially for the setting that we're in and the way the aesthetics of the Brave and the Bold cartoon are.
Absolutely. I love the way, again, perfect for this, you know, somewhat oafish, but ultimately, you know, mighty good guy Aquaman. That design's perfect. I love Arthur Jr.'s suit is based on it's the ocean camouflage Aquaman suit.
Aha!
Which was originated in the 1986 Aquaman miniseries, which was by Neil Posner and Craig Hamilton. There's been some toys and stuff of that. It's like the blue and black and white suit that he dons from time to time. I think they actually just brought it back in the comics not too long ago. And I believe, speaking of our wonderful corporate overlords, I believe there's a version of that suit in the new Momoa movie. So,
oh, okay, interesting.
That's a fun little shout out to a. You didn't get it. It wasn't long for this world as far as the comics went, but it's a pretty memorable design, and it was a fun throwaway. And I also love the Mira design, because she's very much. She looks like the wife from Married with Children a little bit. Like, she has that.
Absolutely.
It's not the beehive, but whatever that. Like 90s, yep. Hairdo, the big hair, like she's in the musical Hairspray. Is perfect. And like the like she and she, but they also gave her like these weird like frog feet. She has like three toes.
Uh-huh.
Like, are those boots? Are those her feet? I don't know. She's a fish person. It could be her feet. I like the Mira design as well for this episode, where she's you know, where she's playing very much playing her part as the sitcom wife, or the, you know, the family vacation wife. So yeah, great character designs all around. And again, a lot of fun things to point at and look at with all of the other superhero cameos and stuff throughout the episode. So for all those reasons, I ended up giving visuals and animation a pretty strong 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I gave it the same exact score. I love the different locales, as you mentioned, some of it based on real places, some of it based on the DC you know, cities, but a great mix of both of those. And yeah, a fun episode. Always love looking at this. It's trying to find the little things that they sneak in there. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And the wonderful Dynamic Music Partners are credited with the music for this week's episode. And boy howdy, from the get-go, from our air adventure with our dog fight at the beginning, all the way through Aquaman's first introduction in the very first scene, we get a lot of music played out here. It's a big portion of that first little sequence that we get there. Not a ton of dialogue, as we mentioned. There's a little conversation between Batman and Enemy Ace, and then a parting words from Enemy Ace, but a lot of it is the attack that the aliens are doing on the soldiers, and then the Batplane swoops in. We get some heroic music played there. We get some more heroic music as Batman and Enemy Ace team up to take down the aliens. And then as we mentioned in that opening scene, when the fisherman is seemingly about to kill the scientists underwater, when Aquaman swoops in, we get a very heroic theme that plays, that sort of suddenly comes to a halt once Aquaman, we realize that Aquaman is actually driving the Winnebago and imagining this whole sequence right before he almost crashes into an oncoming traffic. So not only do we have that music, then the music sort of continues later on and plays a huge part of our scene, is our traveling scene that we get, a traveling montage across the U.S. And again, as Aquaman is continually taunted by various different stops and sights and sounds of different heroes being able to act in their most heroic ways while he has to sit on the sidelines. The music sort of very much plays into that entire scene, as it's almost completely without dialogue for that period of time. So a lot of fun played up there. And then ultimately in our final scene, of course, with the heaviest action of the episode, there's of course lots of fight music that our Dynamic Music Partners were able to include there. Lots of fun for the episode. Any specific pieces stand out to you that I did not mention?
Yeah, no, I think you covered most of the big ones. I definitely loved that that vacation montage piano saxophone solo we were getting there. I think that's a lot of fun intercut with the footage of Aquaman seeing all these superheroes in action that he can't join in with. That's a great bit. And then the very end, they kind of transition back into the I think what's more par for the course for this episode, where you bring in the bongos, and you get that more traditional Brave and the Bold fight music as you bring that in. It has a little touch of the Adam West Show music to it as well. So I like the way it sort of transitioned. Once we get back to our Batman team up show at the very end, we get a little extra there, which I appreciate. But I love the tone for this episode. And then, as you mentioned, the flashback or the World War One stuff at the beginning is a lot of fun as well. So I ended up with another very strong 8 out of 10 for my music score.
Same exact score for me as well. An eight for music. Our dynamic music partners did a great job. Cheap plug here, especially on our original air date here, if you're listening to it. But check out the dynamic music partners. This week, actually, they released the entirety of the first volume of Batman Beyond soundtrack is finally available on your streaming services, and also available for digital download, I believe, or digital purchase. So check that out. We've talked about that. We've demanded it every time we've done pretty much every series, like how great it is to be able to access the entirety of the Batman the Animated Series soundtrack and listen to those pieces and kind of in isolation and hear the ins and outs of it. While it's almost impossible to do so and do it justice, pun intended, when you're watching it with dialogue and you're watching the action on your television screen. So it's nice to be able to, that Warner Brothers finally was able to get that stuff released. So congratulations to our Twitter, or formerly known as Twitter friends, the Dynamic Music Partners, on finally getting that released. And make sure you check that out if you do have some time. Some great pieces there from that first volume.
Absolutely. And hopefully, gosh, one day, as we've often said on the show, it would be lovely if someday we could get a proper release of like the full score for all these shows. But, you know, we'll take the victories where we can get them. And this is certainly a big victory, finally getting some of that Beyond music onto digital platforms and all that as well. So yeah, great that their work is still being celebrated and rewarded, as it should be, so many years later.
Absolutely. Stream it early and often. That way, once those numbers come in, the powers that be, the overlords that we've already name checked several times, maybe they'll get the hint that this stuff is demanded and there's enough demand for it to produce all the other stuff that we want to. All right, Liam, let's move on to our final category of the day, which, of course, is going to be voice acting. And as is the case, typically, when we review Batman, the Brave and the Bold, we have a pretty sizable cast here, although we do get some characters pulling double duty, of course, as is the case. But lots of stuff to talk about here as far as our voice cast is concerned, and a couple of familiar voices, speaking of Batman Beyond.
Absolutely. So I'll start there, since you mentioned it. We do have Will Friedle, Terry McGinnis, Batman himself, as our Blue Beetle in this episode. Also, we have James Arnold Taylor as Green Arrow, who we've talked about before. We have Dee Bradley Baker, who comes in to voice both the Fisherman and the Clock King. Which is a great bit there when the lobster attack happens, when they all jump out of the tank at the seafood restaurant and latch onto him. He just starts screaming in German. And it's incredible. It's he's got great comedic chops, legendary voice actor as he is. But I just thought that was a great bit. Another fun one. We have Steven Root, who folks would know from things like Dodgeball and Office Space. I think we've mentioned him once or twice before on this show as well. I think he's maybe in Unity and one other episode, Dollar in the Bat Episodes Jar. Mm-hmm. But yeah, playing our Penguin here. I love him as Penguin. I think he has the same vibe as a Burgess Meredith Penguin, but he's not trying to do Burgess Meredith. Mm-hmm. And that's like an important distinction to me. He still kind of has the wah wah laugh, but he's not trying to do, when he's just talking, he's doing more of like a 1940s gangster voice to him. Like he's got this great sort of effect to it, even though it still at the end of the day feels very authentic to a Silver Age Penguin take.
Yeah. It's I did notice that he has the same similar, it's not the same similar cadence, I wouldn't say, but the dialogue, of course, everybody has an alliterative name, or he ends every sentence with an alliterative name where he insults somebody by calling them some sort of bird. So that tracks with the classic 60s Batman take, the Burgess Meredith, and he does have the the sort of squawking that Burgess Meredith did. But as you mentioned, it's not an impersonation. It's his own take on it in a way. And yeah, it certainly fits the aesthetic for this show. It's an homage while not making fun of or making light of or poking fun at or even completely ripping off what came before it. You can see the homage there, but it's not the exact same. It puts its own stamp on it, which is what this show did so perfectly, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think he, great job. And yeah, other than, I mean, we've talked about the Joker a lot, I feel like, in these Brave and the Bold episodes, but we don't, because it's a show that features so many other superheroes, we don't necessarily delve into Batman's rogues gallery that often on this show. So also a fun change of pace to have him as our big bad of the episode. But yes, elsewhere in the episode, we have Serena Irwin as Mira. Interesting. She actually does a lot of work as a voice director, as much as she does as a, I think as an actor herself, but has also done quite a bit of voice acting as well. I think she's also voiced Mira in some other stuff, maybe some of the live action. Oh, no, I'm sorry, she voices Aquaman's mother in the Throne of Atlantis movie. So, yeah, I think, like I said, she's playing the sitcom wife to John DiMaggio. We'll talk about him more in a minute, but and the mother that's sort of exasperated by Preston Strother playing her son who doesn't want to be there, who's too cool for school. I think she does a really good job.
Yeah, she is the she's the punchline in a lot of things. She's the one that's ready to scream and throttle Aquaman, at least for the 2/3 of the episode. Mm-hmm. Always catching him in his lies and calling him out and being suspicious of him even prior to catching him in being as he sneaks away to do his heroic duties. But yeah, I think the real dynamic part that we get, as I mentioned before, is that heart to heart that she and Aquaman have as they're lying there on the conveyor belt, just as the Penguin is giving his long-winded speech about his plans. And they sort of have this moment together where she finally relents and realizes this. And it's not like she's exasperated in the moment while she does it. It's a loving embrace of, this is who Aquaman is. You're just a hero and we want you to be a hero. And then that final sort of epilogue that we get at the end with the family realizing together they love sort of being the adventure, going on this type of adventure as opposed to the stereotypical road trip adventure. And she plays she has some lines in that I thought were good too. So yeah, she does a wonderful job.
Absolutely. And then rounding out our main cast here, we do in fact have Diedrich Bader as Batman, kind of playing a minor supporting role in this week because he's not the star of this episode. But you know, we can't have him play Batman in an episode and not talk about how great he is. I think again, we talk about how, like Adam West's Batman, the parts where he's funny are funny because there's never a wink at the camera from Batman. Like, he is, he's this guy all the time. And I think there's some of the bits where he's like in mid fight or chase sequence with the Penguin and Aquaman's on the phone trying to make small talk and trying to get in on the action. And he's just like, enjoy your vacation, Aquaman. Like, he's just so dry. And just refusing, like, he's trying to make Aquaman be a, to keep him on the straight and narrow path and make sure he's being a good dad before, ultimately having to call for help when it looks like the Penguin has him dead to rights. It's a lot of fun in this episode, but obviously the main event here, John DiMaggio, who also voices Enemy Ace, voice of Aquaman. Of course, another legendary voice actor, voices Bender on Futurama and about a million other voices, played the Joker in Under the Red Hood. We've talked about him several times on this show before, but getting a full starring role of him as Aquaman in this episode, gosh, what a treat.
he is phenomenal. Like, in the way that one of our favorite shows growing up was the Tick cartoon. Mm-hmm. What's so great about that character is that he's so blissfully unaware and content and happy with being a hero, and everything around him, like, is, despite it being just absolutely bonkers, he's just so happy and joyous. And that's like the same characterization of this Aquaman. Like, yeah. He loves being a hero. He loves fighting crime. He loves teaming up with people. He loves Batman. He loves the other heroes that he gets to interact with. Like, he just embraces it and loves it and has so much joy being Aquaman. And Mr. DiMaggio's performance, like, just exudes that. Like, it's, you're just, it bleeds through your, through the audio, through the performance. Like, you can tell that. He captures that, again, it's sort of like the boisterous hero from any era of heroic tales. Like, this is the guy that just loves being the hero, and he's gonna laugh in the face of evil. And like, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, an ancient Roman hero or a modern day, you know, superhero, this it's the same characterization, and he captures that so well with everything about his performance. It's his timing, his delivery, the way that his voice inflections, all of it. It's just, it's perfect. Like, it's so great.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just a tour de force performance. And as mentioned, him playing off Miss Irwin as Mira, and him being, you know, trying to be the good husband, but just not being able to snap out of it, to the point where she's talking about like all these things she wants to go. And then you just hear his inner monologue, and you just hear him be like, ha ha, take that, Black Manta. Like, he can't not think about being a superhero for even 5 seconds. There's so many lines. There's one part, as mentioned, the trope of the vacation, they have to go see like the world's largest something, and they go to the world's largest like mound of sod or something, or house, yeah, sod house, and he says, think of the heroics it took to pack that much sod into the one location. And like, even when he's really like on the straight and narrow and is trying to enjoy himself, there's just such a you know, that goofy superhero is just bubbling under the surface. So just based on, I think, Mr. DiMaggio's performance alone, but with a very strong supporting cast as well, once again, felt like I had no choice but to give this another 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's very hard when we're reviewing these episodes not to just fully enjoy and embrace the entire voice cast. I mean, you have people that are, you know, years and years and years into their vocal performances here. You have the great Andrea Romano, responsible for the voice casting, and, you know, at this point probably was doing this with her eyes closed, you know, getting these performances out of these actors. So you have amazing talent, you have an amazing voice director, and combined, of course, you're going to get some just incredible, memorable performances, you know, grade A++ stuff here. So yeah, unsurprising. Both perfect scores from both of us.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, well, it's time to total up our scores for this week's episode, and totaling everything here, I end up with a very strong 34 out of 40. What about you?
And I am just a couple points higher at a 36 out of 40.
Ah, there we go. All right. Just a point shy of our top picks category there, Liam. But still, we review Elseworlds in a vacuum. We must remind people that every single time we review one. But I dare say, if you're going to watch this Aquaman character pops up in certain cameos. He's been in cameos in a couple of the episodes that we've reviewed, but this is his tour de force starring role. And it's a fun episode. It's funny. It includes a whole bunch of other characters. It makes me wish that they did an Aquaman spinoff show.
Absolutely.
Like if you're all this stuff is being rebooted these days, right? And I know Mr. Tucker's working on the hopefully to be released soon Batman Caped Crusader show. But man, if Warner Brothers was going to reboot something for content, boy, this show would be like, just do an Aquaman show. Like, absolutely. I know that they tried to do an Aquaman cartoon the King of Aquaman, King of Atlantis show for HBO mm-hmm. Max. I'm sure it was fine. Never watched it, but I'm sure it was fine. But you should have just done this. You should have done an Aquaman show with Mr. DiMaggio, with his family and crazy adventures interacting with the Silver Age villains, and called it a day. Cause this is perfect. Two thumbs up for rewatchability for me.
Yeah, same here. It's this is one of those ones, if you're a DC fan, if you're a fan of the mainline DCAU but haven't necessarily dipped your toe into this show, this is very much on the short list of episodes I would probably pick to introduce someone to the show. This is a wonderful, wonderful way to spend 22 minutes. And again, it gives you a flavor of the show as far as the tone in certain episodes. And obviously, as we've talked about, there are more serious episodes as well, which again, I think just speaks to the wonderful thing that the people that made this show understood, which is that these characters are doing all of this at the same time. Like the Batman that's in back alleys shaking down thugs to find the guy who killed his parents is the same guy who's going to get decapitated by a giant penguin device in a warehouse in Gotham City. Like, it's the same guy. And the same thing with Aquaman. Like, Aquaman can be this very serious, you know, warrior, king of the sea. And he can also be just sort of a bit of a goofball at times. Like, you can play with it, and it's you don't necessarily always have to pick one or the other as far as a lane for your characters when you're painting with as broad of a brush as this show does. So yeah, this one's just a hoot, and an easy recommendation for a rewatch.
Absolutely. All right, Liam, well, that will begin to wrap us up for this week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Some housekeeping for right now. Don't forget, we would love your support for the podcast. You can do so a myriad of ways. A bunch of the free ways are by supporting us on social media at DCAU Review on Instagram and X/Twitter. Follow us on there. Lots of great stuff being posted on Twitter and on Instagram. And you can also, of course, we are on Threads. That website is still chugging along. I guess it's one of those things where until they can write it off as a tax loss, it's going to continue on here or something. I don't know. Yes, we are still on Threads. Liam does occasionally post stuff on there, so check that out as well. If you're a Threads person, who knows, maybe 2024 will finally be the year that X bites Twitter bites the dust, you know. Who knows, it's been, the demise has been rumored now for what feels like years, but we will continue there for as long as the platform exists, or as long as Liam can tolerate it. We are of course also would love your support if you subscribe to us on our YouTube channels. We mentioned on the Pod Tower at youtube.com/thePodTower. You can also support the podcast. We know it is the holidays. Money is tight in this economy, as it always is. But if you want to support the podcast monetarily, there's a link in the show notes for you to check out. Or you can check out a link to our merch store if you want to get yourself a little stocking stuffer, or maybe a friend of the show, send them a little gift. Check out the store link. You can get yourself a mug, a shirt, a hat, something like that, a little trinket, a sticker even. And we thank those that are monthly supporters of ours, as well as those that have purchased items from the store. Got to get some new merch in there in 2024. It's mm-hmm. it's on the docket here, Liam, with the calendar page turning. Liam, so as we continue here, we only said it like twice so far the episode, so I'm going to go ahead and embrace it here. As we continue with Aqua Fantasmonth here in the month of December, we're continuing with another episode next week, but we're going to shift gears here away from Aquaman and switch more to the Phantasm. Is the M in month or Phantasm? I'm not sure. Even in designing the logo, I couldn't decide.
That's the magic of Phantasmonth. I think it's up to user interpretation. When I've been making it a hashtag, I do capitalize the M in month, so that would suggest that it's Aqua Fantas and then month. But I uh, That's not my hill to die on. You know, I'm not here to police how other people celebrate Aquafantas Month. My, you know, I have room in my heart for all unique ways that this wonderful month is celebrated. But,
that's right. We are not dictators here. We believe in liberty. So celebrate as you will. But we're shifting to focus more on the Fantas rather than the Aqua of Aquafantas Month starting next week.
That's right. So we have something really cool coming in the pipeline a little later in the month. But we thought, looking back, we have done, what is this, 289?
This is 289 we just did today.
Okay, so it has been 281 episodes of this show, just of our mainline show, not counting bonus episodes, since we originally reviewed Batman Mask of the Phantasm. And with this year being the 30th, this month, in fact, being the 30th anniversary of that film debuting in theaters, debuted on Christmas Day, 1993, we thought, it's what better time to dust off? We don't do the re-reviews often, but for special occasions, and for one that I think we just, when we covered it, we didn't really know what our show was yet.
We didn't know what we were doing.
Right. So I just think there's a lot of meat left on the bone as far as discussing that that movie. And like I said, we have something a bit more of a retrospective on the process of making the film coming later in the month. But we thought, first things first, let's give ourselves a little refresher and revisit what is considered by many. And we'll find out next week if that includes us as the greatest Batman film ever made. So join us next week for a re-review of Batman Mask of the Phantasm, and we'll find out if we agree with our past selves scores for each category.
That is right. We'll go down the full boundaries that we put in place when we're doing a re-review next week. It's going to be fun, Liam. Haven't watched this since the last time we watched it for another podcast, so it'll be good to revisit this as we do from time to time, and look at it once again with our sort of set lenses that we have now, as you mentioned, now that we are 289 plus over 50 bonus episodes into our podcast here. We kind of know what we're doing now. So we'll see. It's going to be a lot of fun as we continue celebrating Aquafantas Month next week. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.